Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
The more you get into this, the more TLR looks like a BUM. To recap, Tony La Russa was hired by the White Sox last month as their manager, and at that time it seemed like a really dumb idea. And it's one that got dramatically dumber when we learned that one day before he was hired, he was charged with DUI by the Maricopa County Attorney's Office for an incident back in February. Now, the incident report from the Arizona Department of Public Safety has come to light. And this incident report is legendary, more than anybody could have ever possibly hoped for. Now, of course, I say this because La Russa didn't maim or kill anybody with his stupidity. On the night in question, an officer approaches his car, which was blocking a lane on State Route 143. At that time, TLRDUI said that he had a flat tire. And he added, quote, "I hit something once I got on the 43, end quote. Now, early in this exchange, TLR immediately starts to name drop in an obvious attempt to beat this rap. He said that he was coming back from dinner with, quote, "friends with the California Angels baseball team," end quote. Nothing better than dropping a name right off the top, but dropping the wrong name. They haven't been the California Angels in 24 years. You know, like, yo, copper. Man, this isn't a thing. Don't you know I was having dinner with my boys from the Brooklyn Dodgers? That's the real thing here. The Brooklyn Dodgers. Maybe you've heard of them. Google that bleep, brother. Hey, listen, man. Some of my best friends ever are cops. In fact, some of my best friends ever are guys who work with the Seattle Pilots. In fact, that's where I was with my dudes from the Seattle Pilots. We good, brother?
Brother.
Yeah, actually, brother, we're awesome. We're awesome, brother, since you came out of the gate with that California Angels blast. Hey, tell Frank Tanana and Bobby Gritch I said, what up, La Russa? Good news is, the good brother was only getting started. Let me read you this next part from Jeff Passan. Quote, when the officer asked for identification, according to the report, La Russa continued instead to talk on the phone to a AAA representative. The officer repeated the command, and La Russa tossed cash and cards onto the passenger seat but did not furnish a driver's license. The officer asked him to hang up his phone and provide the license, end quote. Like, yo, copper, yo, man, back the hell off. I'll get to you when I get to you. Can't you see I'm on the phone? Can't you see I'm talking to AAA, which is where your ass is going to be if you don't start treating me with a little respect, brother?
Brother.
I can only talk to one person at a time, and right now I'm talking to AAA. You wait your turn, cop, and I will deal with you when I'm done. Like, this old man's arrogance and defiance are next level. They're completely off the charts. So when TLRDUI finally does hang up the phone, he reportedly starts to rifle through all of his items looking for his license. But according to the report, he actually passed over the license twice before he turned it over. Pretty safe to say that if you can't recognize your own driver's license, you should not be behind the wheel of a car. Then it escalates. The officer asked TLR to get out of the car to conduct field sobriety tests. TLRDUI ain't about that life. I mean, this has obviously gone on way too long as it is. If this cop had any idea who or what TLRDUI was about and what he had accomplished, he would have let him go a long time ago. Better yet, he would have given him a police escort right to his doorstep. You know, the police escort that he so richly deserved, given what a legend he is. Ask him. But nope. This cop is going to put this guy through the paces. He's going to administer field sobriety tests. And that's when TLR starts spitting crazy gibberish, like telling the officer he had undergone hip surgery 4 weeks earlier. And then he asked why the tests had to be done in the first place. The officer says he smells alcohol in La Russa, so much so that the officer wanted to bust out with a portable breath test. But TLRDUI wasn't having any of that either. Quote, "I don't trust it." He asked him to take a portable breath test, and he told him he didn't trust it. Again, next level arrogance. Now my man is above technology. Yeah, no, cop, I'm good. But your breath test isn't. Your breath test does not meet my standards for accuracy, so you can just get the hell out of my face, because I'm not having it and I'm not doing it. And then, according to the report, at one point, TLR asks, what makes you think I don't have control of my facilities? Yeah, I don't know, dude. Maybe it's the fact you hit a curb. You're blocking a lane of potential traffic. You couldn't recognize your own driver's license. You said you were chopping it up with the California Angels. Other than that, you're doing awesome. Eventually, he agrees to take a breath test, quote, if it gets me out of here. End of quote. Yeah, that or if it gets you arrested. I mean, you're starting to get the sense that this old fool might think that he's above the law, that all those rules that apply to all of us somehow do not apply to him. Yeah, well, they do. How do I know? Because he blew a .9, which is above the legal limit, and got him arrested for DUI. And as embarrassing as this has been, it's about to find a new gear. There's always another gear, because according to the report, the officer asked TLR if he had anything to drink that night, and he responded that he had one glass of wine. One glass of wine with dinner. Dude, how big a glass of wine was that if you blew a .90? I mean, were you sipping that Cabernet out of a big gulp? One glass of wine. But you knew he was feeling like it might be slipping away. Like, this is the bottom of the ninth. The lead is dwindling. So he goes to the bullpen for the closer. And that's when he asks, quote, did you see my ring? Do you see my ring? As I've said for years on this show, if you have to say, do you know who I am? Either that person doesn't know or doesn't care. Dropping a do you know who I am is the last desperate attempt to change a situation. In this case, he can't say, do you know who I am? Because the officer does. He's already been arrested for DUI. So he's got to go even lower than that. Even lower than do you know who I am is, did you see my ring? Hey, yo, you see that ring? Kiss it. And let's get the hell on with the rest of our lives, brother. Hey, you see that ring? You want to wear brother. It, copper? I'll let you. Clearly, this guy's not nearly as impressed with the bling as La Russa is himself. In fact, he had no idea what the hell La Russa was even talking about. So now he digs deep. Now La Russa, in the box, 0-2, down to his last strike. He steps out. He takes a deep breath. He knocks the mud off his spikes. He adjusts his helmet. He gets back in the box. And then when the officer asks him what he meant, he says, quote, I'm a Hall of Famer baseball person. Not a Hall of Famer manager, a Hall of Famer baseball person. This dude has reached the stage of drunkenness and desperation to the point where he doesn't recognize his own driver's license and he can't remember his own job title. He's flailing for words. If he can't find the word manager, how the hell is he going to find the alphabet? Much less find it backwards. Hey, I'm a Hall of Fame baseball person. You know, that guy who is in the uniform and makes that list of players before the game. That's me. I'm a Hall of Famer, one of those. I'm a Hall of Famer thingamajig. I mean, dude, what an incredibly pathetic and desperate move. Exactly how was that going to go? Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, you're Tony La Russa. That Tony La Russa. That Hall of Famer baseball person. Man, why didn't you say so, legend? Carry on, yo. Again, you only embarrass and humiliate yourself like that if you're extremely drunk, extremely desperate, or you've done it before and it's worked, or all of the above. I'm going to go with E, all of the above. And then finally, quote, I'm legit. I'm a Hall of Famer, brother. You're just trying to embarrass me. Brother. Man, that stands on its own. Look, I know that everybody deserves due process. Everybody deserves due process. But if that guy's going to go with that, the White Sox ought to break him off right now. Forget all the other horrible reasons for hiring this guy. Quote, I'm legit. I'm a Hall of Famer, brother. You're trying to embarrass me. Is grounds for dismissal. Right then and there. I don't even need due process. He should get broken off for that. Reinsdorf should have never hired him anyway, but he should fire him for that. And then the bombshell. When he gets to the station and they ask him to submit a blood sample, he drops this gem. I will not comply with your tests. I don't trust it, brother.
Brother.
An incredible line. One of the all-time best lines. A Hall of Fame line. That line is legit, brother.
brother.
It's coming from a guy in his mid-70s, not like some young punk. That's a senior citizen telling the cops, I will not comply with your tests. I don't trust it, brother.
Brother.
There's your ultimate mic drop, your ultimate walk-off shot. Imagine having the balls to tell that to a highway patrol. I will not comply with your tests. I don't trust it, brother.
Brother.
Like he's some sort of rebel or freedom fighter or Billy Jack or not a drunk. It's incredible. Oh, and by the way, when he finally did give up his blood, 0.95. What an absolutely amazing night, TLR. Take a bow, brother.
Brother.
And by the way, this is the same guy who, when he was inducted in the Hall of Fame, was going on and on about players and their entitlement. What's more entitled than, do you know who I am? Do you want to see my ring? I don't trust your tests, brother.
Brother.
Take a bow, brother.
Brother.
An all-timer. And last thought, how are you going to trust this guy to control or manage anybody else when he can't control or manage himself? So, clones, let me start this week by asking you a question. What do you want when you're craving protein or you need more energy? I'll tell you what you don't want. Bars, sugary snacks, energy drinks. No, you know what you want? You want beef, pure and simple. So where is the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your father's jerky. Not shriveled, not dry, not tasteless. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. So it's tender and tasty. It's not tough. So why is it so good? Because Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for their relentless commitment to quality. They take smoked beef extremely seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. Old Trapper is packed with protein, and it comes in four amazing flavors to satisfy all your cravings. Quality smoked meat at its finest that goes with you wherever you go. So make sure you look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. That way you can see the quality that you are purchasing. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, just ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares Old Trapper. What's your beef? Quarterback Talia Tagovailoa joins me. Talia, great to have you on the show. How are you?
Good. How about you?
Good, man. Good. Listen, let me start you off with talking about you coming off the fact you had that big game against Penn State. You were 14 of your first 19 passes. You had a couple of touchdowns in the first quarter. That gave the team a lead that it would not give up. I want to start right there because Maryland has not always had a lot of success against Penn State. So what did it mean to you to come out and turn in a performance like that and show up on the big stage that way?
I mean, it was just a good feeling, you know, going out there with my brothers and just taking what we do at practice every day. I think what we showed on Saturday is just the hard work that we put in throughout the week, really our whole team. So it was good.
Yeah, not only that, but you were coming off a game where, to me, the most impressive thing is the way you bounced back after the season opener. That was not necessarily the result you would have liked, but you handled it so well. When you think back about the trip back after the loss to Northwestern, the trip back afterwards, how were you able to make sure that everybody stayed locked in and were focused on bouncing back as quickly as possible?
Well, I think our whole team really helped me, you know, stay locked in and stay focused. You know, after the game, you know, Coach really encouraged us, and he told us, you know, everything is going to be good. We just got to continue to work hard. And I think that Sunday coming back really helped us because, you know, we had to get back to practice that day. And, you know, we had a Friday night game too, so I think it helped us get over thinking about Northwestern and really focusing more on Minnesota that week.
You know, Talia, you talk about Minnesota. It's one thing to have that mindset, right? You want to have the right mindset, but it's another to go out there and execute. You did bounce back in that second game. You threw for 394 yards. You had three touchdown passes. You had a couple of touchdown runs. It was one of the greatest quarterback performances in school history. So how much pride was there in the way you showed up and bounced back against Minnesota in particular?
Yes, sir. I mean, you know, I was just going out there, you know, trying to do my job and just more so learning from last week. And, you know, it was just a great team win. You know, our defense showed up when they had to. And, you know, everyone was doing their job, and I'm just happy we got the win.
Listen, I understand 1 week at a time, one day at a time, one practice at a time, all that stuff. But because of the success and that you're having and the entire team has had, there's a lot of buzz and a really good vibe about Maryland football. Fans have gone through some challenging times. What's it mean to bring back some of that joy and some of that excitement to the program? And what's that feel like to you?
Oh, yes, sir. It feels good, you know. I mean, I think Maryland, this is what Maryland football is all about. And, you know, we're just trying to work hard and win football games. So,
I mean, when you talk about Maryland football, of course, you started out at Alabama. You made the decision to transfer. So what was it about Maryland and the relationship that you have with the head coach, Mike Locksley, that made you feel like that was the right place for you?
Yes, sir. Coach Locks has a great relationship with my parents as well as my brother. And my family is really big on trust. And you know, my family really trusts Coach Locks with me. So that was just the biggest thing.
You know, it was such an unusual offseason, right? And then at the same time, you were looking to earn that starting job. So what was your process? How did you go about approaching that? And then what did it feel like when you were named the starter?
Well, Coach Locks told me when I first came here that, you know, I'm going to have to earn everything. You know, nothing is given. I'm going to have to, you know, prove myself not only to him and the coaches, but as well as to the team. And that's by just working hard every day and just showing up. And when Coach told me or announced that I was a starter, you know, it was a good feeling for me. You know, my first time being a starter in college. And, you know, despite how things went that first game, you know, it's, at the end of the day, we're just trying to win football games. So it was good to see our team win.
Maryland quarterback Taulia Tagovailoa joining us. Big game coming up against Ohio State on Saturday. Of course, you mentioned family and how important family is to you. There were some great clips on social media over the weekend of you cheering and celebrating and encouraging Tua as you played against the Cardinals. Like, what was that like? What kind of emotions were you feeling when you were watching your brother?
Yes, sir. I mean, it was very cool, you know, to see him come back. And I'm just happy to see him have fun, you know, knowing his journey and process and what he'd been through. And to see him play like how he did, you know, it was just overwhelming. And knowing the tough times that, you know, Tua had with his hip and stuff. And, you know, just seeing him come back and nothing is different. You know, he looks more faster to me and just more comfortable again. So I think that was the biggest thing for me.
God, I can't even imagine what it must be like for you guys, because from the outside looking in, it's an amazing thing to see. For instance, when you played against Minnesota, the story goes that your parents were in the stands, and when you threw your first TD pass, your brother immediately FaceTimed your dad and was celebrating. So what does him supporting you like that mean to you?
Oh, yes, sir. I mean, it's everything. I wish he could be here watching my games live, and I wish I could be, you know, at their games live, but it's just cool, you know. I think it's the biggest thing is just making my parents happy. But, you know, Tua has always been my biggest, you know, fan, and I've always been his biggest fan. So, sure.
It's a love, man. It's beautiful. So the story goes that you and your father stayed up nearly all night talking about the Minnesota game, Tua, and everything else. Like, how would you describe the impact that your parents have had on you growing up?
Oh, yes, sir. I mean, my parents is everything to me. And, yeah, after the game, we stayed up and just talked. And it was really more so just spending time with each other. You know, because throughout the week, we don't really get to see each other and all that stuff. So it was more so catching up. And yeah, it was a good time. I miss my parents every time I get to see them. You know, it's good to just spend time with them.
So you got two big wins this season. You got a ton of momentum and a lot of focus. Now you've got a major challenge in Ohio State on Saturday. What is the biggest challenge when you face them? And then how much are you looking forward to that opportunity?
Yes, sir. I mean, just their defense. You know, they have a lot of great athletes, and their box is really good. And, you know, they're just, you know, the number one team in the Big Ten. And, you know, for me, I'm just looking, and our team, we're just looking forward to the opportunity to compete against them. And, you know, we're going to do our best, and, you know, we'll see how everything goes.
Hey, Taulia, one last thought, and I'll let you go, and I appreciate your time. Man, you're taking this all in stride. I mean, you're really focused, and it seems like you really have a pretty good handle on this. I mean, is this the way it's always been for you, or have you had to kind of take a step back and really slow everything down? Because everything is moving pretty quickly right now, yet it seems like you are taking it in stride. What does it all feel like to you?
Man, it feels good, you know. I think the biggest thing is just our team, you know. Coach really focuses on, you know, one week at a time and one day at a time. And I think that's what really slows everything down for me. You know, we're not looking at the bigger picture. We're just looking at one game at a time and one team. So I think if we continue to do that, we'll be good.
Mindful. Maryland is taking on number 3 Ohio State. That game is at Saturday, or on Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Eastern time. Taulia Tagovailoa is the quarterback of Maryland. They're having a great year. Taulia, great to have you on the show. Really appreciate your time. Good luck this weekend.
Thank you.
All right, so every now and then, we do a segment on the program where I'll break out some ambiguous piece of sound. And then I'll play that ambiguous piece of sound a number of times, and I'll get you to try and guess what that sound is before I reveal it. We've done this before. It's always fun, and it always works. Like, go back to 2018. Remember when I dropped this on you. Oh, my God. Without any context at all, that's pretty tough to know. In fact, nearly impossible to know. That was the sound of Rob Gronkowski firing a six-barrel rotary Gatling gun. But once you know that, you can almost see it in your mind. Think about it. Oh, my God. You know, Gronk getting all geeked on that. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Same thing with this. I played this as part of our Guess That Sound contest back in 2019. Oh! Pretty good sound, right? Again, what is that? Oh! Again. Oh! Again. Oh! That's Patrick Reed snapping his wedge over his knee and Paul Azinger reacting on the Fox broadcast in real time again. Oh! Like, bam, bam. Oh! Pretty great. All right, one more. Again. Guess that sound from 2019.
Oh my God.
One more time.
Oh my God.
That piece of audio stumped the entire audience for 3 hours until I revealed that it was Elon Musk throwing a rock at his allegedly bulletproof Tesla truck and unexpectedly breaking the window of that ridiculous looking rig that proved that it was not only not bulletproof, it wasn't even rock-proof.
Oh my God.
You know, that's like going into Capone's vault and finding nothing. Like, you're on live TV, or you're out there on a big stage, and you can't wait to roll out your, quote, bulletproof whip. And to show how strong and durable it is, you're going to throw a rock at it. And then the thing shatters.
Oh my God.
All right, so now this audio. Not as ambiguous, but still hard to decipher without some context. A lot of the sound quality is not that good, so that's part of what that is. And then part of that is the natural mumbling cadence of the person saying it. I will reveal what it is after I play it, but first, see if you can figure out what it is and who it is.
I don't like coffee.
Right, so again, kind of tricky, a little bit indecipherable. Who and what is this sound?
I don't like coffee.
Name that sound.
I don't like coffee.
What is that sound?
I don't like coffee.
Who is that?
I don't like coffee.
What's he saying?
I don't like coffee.
All right. That is the sound of a mumbling curmudgeon. A third place, 3-5 coach who's looking up at the Miami Dolphins named Bill Belichick. And apparently Bill Belichick does not like coffee.
I don't like coffee.
I don't like coffee.
I don't like coffee.
Somehow during his weekly radio hit on WEEI, the subject of coffee came up. And Hood dialed up his most aggressive offense of the year, and he went on all attack mode. He is just spreading fools out.
I mean, I understand I'm probably missing it, but I don't like coffee. I can't stand the smell of coffee. I don't like coffee ice cream, and I don't like coffee-flavored anything. I don't know. I just don't have a taste for it. I've tried, but it just doesn't work for me. I mean, my grandmother put a glass of milk and poured, like, probably a thimble of coffee in it, and I couldn't even drink that. So it's just one of those things that I just didn't develop a taste for, you know? Nothing against coffee, nothing against Dunkin' Donuts, nothing against anything. It's just not for me.
Do your job, man. Drink your coffee, dude. I mean, damn. A few things here. First one being, how in the hell does this guy give a complete dissertation on coffee but cannot be bothered to answer any question about anything else ever? I don't need to reset the never-ending library of the Hood being a mumbling, bumbling, dismissive, repetitive grouch, because we'd be here all day long. You already know that. But damn, it looks like this guy saved every one of his words for coffee. Second takeaway is, well, this pretty much explains everything, doesn't it? The man hates coffee.
I don't like coffee.
He sure as hell acts like a dude who's got a blood coffee content level of less than zero, right? No wonder this dude's always in a bad mood. You rip my coffee from me, I would probably be an even worse person to be around than the hood. How is a guy who works those hours and breaks tape in a dark room 24/7 not fueling up with some Joe? It's a perfectly legal and awesome performance enhancer, and he's literally leaving it on the table. How does that guy work the way he works without Joe? Third and most important takeaway in this, there are two types of people in the world, right? People who like coffee and people who don't. And the people who don't are babies, infants, and serial killers.
I don't like coffee.
All right, so maybe that's a little bit extreme. All right, I'll own that. I'll walk that back. My apologies to the serial killer community. Because even you evil psychos aren't as deranged as those who don't like coffee. I mean, come on.
I don't like coffee.
On the list of universally beloved food, and don't come in here with, hey, Rome, coffee is ass. Your ass. It's on the list of universally beloved food and drink. Coffee's right at the top, all right? It shares the podium with pizza and tacos and donuts. You ever meet somebody who doesn't like coffee, pizza, tacos, or donuts? Things get really weird really quickly. You know, some people say that I can't be friends with somebody who doesn't drink. Yeah, I would never say that. But I will say this. I'm sure as hell not going to be friends with somebody who doesn't drink coffee. Why do you think Rit and I can never really talk about anything above and beyond what we have to talk about?
Game on.
Well, that and about 10 other things. But, I mean, seriously. Don't you, when you find out somebody does not like coffee, don't you look at them like, dude, what's wrong with you? What the hell is your deal? I mean, you've heard me say it on this program. You've heard me say, if I have to choose between booze and coffee for the rest of my life, that's not a hard choice. I'm taking coffee before you can finish the question. It's that important. I like it that much. And trust me, I'm a fan of the booze on the weekends. As for the hoodie, to come at it the way he did, running all sorts of junk the way he does, going on about how it tastes, how it smells. I mean, come on, dude. Coffee is not just the world's best PED. It's like heavenly nectar of all the senses. It smells great. It looks amazing. It tastes even better.
I don't like coffee.
You don't like coffee? I don't like people who don't like coffee. I mean, coffee is the most important and valued member of the XR4TI. We ran out the other day for a couple of days. Dude, this place nearly came to a grinding halt. Like, we were not even functioning. Except for old Rit, all hyped up on his sugar. All hyped up on his hot chocolate. Didn't bother him at all. I'm like, Alvin, can you get your ass back to work? We got a problem here, yo. The coffee has its own desk right at the most focal point of the office. It's like a shrine, man. And finally, no one likes coffee or beer or hard alcohol the first time they try it, hood. Like when your mom back in the day dropped that thimble of coffee into your milk and you didn't like it, you never went back after that. It's an acquired taste. All great things in this universe have a barrier to entry. You have to earn it. You have to teach your taste buds the way, the path. You have to show them who runs the show. And once they convert, you're in for a lifetime of the very best things that this world has to offer. If it sounds like I'm passionate about coffee, it's because I'm passionate about coffee. You take a run of coffee, you're taking a run at me. It's like a reason to go. I'm not having it, hood. I bet you did not know this. Did you know that a fire department responds to a fire every 24 seconds? That said, we have teamed up with First Alert, the most trusted brand in fire safety, to help you be ready for the unexpected and to review some key safety tips. Smoke and carbon monoxide alarms can help provide an early warning in the event of a home emergency. Having enough First Alert smoking carbon monoxide alarms is one of the very best things that you can do for your home and your family. So what you want to do is install alarms on every single level and in every bedroom of your home. Once the alarms are installed, it's really important to maintain them by testing them with regularity. And remember, alarms do not last forever. They do have to be replaced at least every 10 years. If you can't remember the last time you replaced yours, it's time to get the unit replaced completely. Here's a great option, my favorite. First Alert's combination smoke and carbon monoxide alarm with a 10-year sealed battery. As mentioned, the alarm does provide 2-in-1 protection against both smoke and carbon monoxide, and I don't have to worry about that battery change for a decade. Lastly, make sure you take time to discuss home safety with your family. You want to plan and you want to practice an escape route, and remember to practice it at least twice a year. For more information on fire safety products, safety tips, and educational activities that you can do at your home with your family, go to firstalert.com/fireprevention month. firstalert.com/fireprevention month. Drake London is my guest. Drake, good to have you on. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. So I had Keaton Slovis on the show a few weeks back, and we talked about what the offseason was like and the fact that for a time the season had been postponed until it was restarted again, and how hard that was. Knowing all of that, what did it feel like for you to be back on the field at the Coliseum on Saturday and playing football again after everything the team had gone through?
Oh, man. It was just too amazing. It was a blessing that came true, and we was really happy to be out there.
All right, so then the game itself, Drake, was something else because it didn't get off to the start that you would have liked. In fact, you were down 27-14 with less than 5 minutes to go, but then you go on that 80-yard drive in less than 2 minutes. It's capped off by a wild fourth down TD, and then you go off the onside kick and you recover it. At that point, what were you thinking and feeling? What's going through your mind?
Oh, that we gotta capitalize on this, and we just gotta finish it off.
Drake London's joining us. And still, there's a lot of work to be done, right, in order to finish it. For example, you get to 4th and 9 from the Arizona State 21. Offensive coordinator Graham Harrell loved the fact that you had a linebacker matched up on you. In fact, what were you thinking? When you break huddle and you see that matchup, what did you think about that?
I saw how the defense was set up, and my eyes got really, really big, and I knew that it was showtime.
All right, so the defense, they figured that out too. So they give the linebacker some help, and now you've got a couple of guys on you when you haul in that TD pass from Slovis. Perfect throw, perfect catch. How much of that is about the chemistry and the understanding that the two of you have in each other?
It means a lot. I mean, we practiced that play I don't know how many times. We failed at it I don't know how many times. And last Saturday, it just so happened to connect perfectly.
Drake London's joining us. So Harrell said this of you. I want to read you a quote. He's as gifted of a receiver as I've ever been around, just with the skill set that's rare in football with his size and ball skills and body control. Like I said, that's rare. You see a lot of basketball guys that do that, but not many of them play the game of football, end quote. I mean, that's really, really high praise. What's it mean to hear that coming from your offensive coordinator?
That absolutely means the world. And I thank him for that, but at the same time, I still have a lot of stuff to work on and to get right with myself and being a receiver. So I still thank him for that, though.
So, Drake, like, for instance, what do you feel like you have to work on, and how do you go about getting right with yourself? What do you mean by that?
My speed, my route running, breaking out of routes, and staying consistent on all my route running. And by getting right by myself, with myself means – getting bigger, faster, and stronger, and just trying to be a complete receiver.
Drake London joining us. In the same time, you've got Reggie Bush tweeting at you, quote, "Yo, Drake London is nice. I see that dog," end quote. I mean, this guy is an icon. He is a Trojan legend. What was your reaction when you saw him tweeting at you like that?
That was absolutely crazy. I mean, he's one of the reasons why I love USC football. So to see that was truly mind-blowing.
All right, so I mentioned off the top, you aren't just a football player, you're also a member of the USC basketball team. Like, take me back. When you were playing ball in Moore Park High School, when did that vision of playing both D1 football and D1 basketball start to become real for you?
Somewhere around, it was in between junior and senior year when that possibility arose. So probably around there, I thought to myself that, why not go be a two-sport athlete in college?
See, that's the thing too, though, right? Because everybody would tell you just the opposite. Like your parents talk about the fact that when you were growing up, they wanted you to play one sport at a time, and that eventually you would have to make a decision, probably by your senior year. But that never actually happened, obviously. Why not?
Like I said, it was a why not situation. If I could do it, I could do it. And my parents were on board with me throughout the whole way. So SC gave me the opportunity to come over here and play two sports, and I said, why not?
Drake London joining us. You know, why not, why me? Let me ask you this. How much of it is about why not, and then how much of it is about everybody saying that you shouldn't? I mean, why not is kind of neutral. It's kind of open-ended. Did you actually get fuel out of this, and did you get motivation from people saying that's not possible and that's not a good idea?
Oh, most definitely. I love when doubters doubt me and say that I can't do certain things, because I know that I'm going to come back and do it 10 times better. So that did fuel me a little bit, but at the same time, it still is a why not, because if you have an opportunity to do something, why don't you go out there and grasp it, you know?
We're talking to Drake London. Exactly. Why not? So if you're a future D1 football player and you're a future D1 basketball player, it'd be pretty easy to get caught up in that. Maybe get kind of a big head, maybe carry yourself like you're pretty special, but that's not the case. In fact, your teachers in high school were saying that you were so focused on your education, so focused on school, that they didn't even know. They knew you were a good athlete, but they didn't know how good of an athlete you were. So why was it so important for you not to let your ego get out of control and get in the way of everything else? How did you manage that?
My parents have done a great job in raising me to keep a level head and understand that you can't get a big head in certain situations. And I've just lived by that my whole life, and I've been trying to live by that still to this day.
So what about last year, the transition from football to basketball? It's got to be kind of interesting. What was that like? Was that what you expected last year?
It was a little bit what I expected. I knew it was going to be hard and grueling. I got sick. I had a lot of setbacks. But I know that this year coming up that it will be much different.
So let me ask you this, Drake. You've proven that this can be done, and this can be done at a high level. I mean, you've proven your point. I mean, not that it was a point that you were looking to prove, but you did it, right? You're playing D1 football. You're playing D1 basketball. You're doing so at a high level. But at the same time, after you broke out in the second half of last football season, and then you had that huge game on Saturday, you know it's going to start up again, right? That you should focus on football. You should go all in on football. How are you going to respond this time? What's your plan?
My plan is just to give me a chance. Just feel it out and let me see what I can do on that court, and then come back to me.
USC is at Arizona on Saturday. What are your early thoughts on Arizona? What are the biggest challenges involved with dealing with them?
We just got to go out there and play our game, not let any of those like little faults that we had last weekend come back and haunt us. We just have to go out there and play our game, and I believe we should be good.
He is a wide receiver on the USC football team. He's a guard on the USC basketball team, and the Trojans are 1-0. They are number 20 in both polls, and they're taking on Arizona on Saturday. He is Drake London. Drake, great to have you on. Thanks so much for doing that. Good luck.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Appreciate you. Well done. Good to see a SoCal killing it. Hey, you can do both. Isn't it so true, though, that early on, even his parents were saying, hey, you're going to have to pick one. You're going to have to decide and go all in. And his response is, really, why? Why not? Why not me? Why not? Why do I have to pick one? Why can't I do both? Why do I have to? Why do I have to? I don't. He doesn't. My thanks to Drake London, USC 1-0. That was a wild, wild game against Arizona State. And now they come back and they go up against Arizona. Tough. He is Bruce Feldman. Bruce, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jim. Good to be on with you.
Always good to talk to you, Bruce. Let's start with the SEC. Last time you and I spoke, Nick Saban had just tested positive for COVID. Obviously, Bruce, a lot had changed after that, but now we're looking at the schedule. Four SEC games have been postponed due to COVID. Georgia at Missouri just joined that list this morning. So what do you make of the week in the SEC, and what does this mean going forward?
Well, it's obviously very turbulent right now all over college football. And the SEC, this was supposed to be a huge weekend for them. You know, they were tying in their programming to the Masters with CBS and certainly ESPN. And Now, granted, LSU is not having a great year, but LSU-Alabama has always been a marquee matchup for them. LSU has big issues. A lot of these issues have come from contact tracing, but certainly there have been a significant number of cases. We've seen record cases and now all over the country, as well as hospitalizations in a lot of places going up. And so college football is now really dealing with it. It's not just, hey, here's a postponement or a cancellation. I mean, this is the SEC losing more than half their games this weekend, and it's getting into the potential scheduling crunch because there isn't much flexibility on the back end of their calendar. So this is a real issue. I think the contact tracing issue has been a big challenge for a lot of programs. We saw, for instance, Wisconsin have one positive test before their opener against Illinois. And then a week later, that number in the program went from 1 to almost 30. And so, you know, whether players, I think a lot of people look at it and go, well, there's daily testing in a lot of conferences, certainly at the Big Ten, the Pac-12, and some of the SEC schools. But just because a player tests negative or a staffer tests negative the next day doesn't mean it's not incubating in their in their bodies, and then 2 or 3 days later, they may not test positive. And if you're around other players, they may have the same issue, and that's where you get these spreads. And that was a concern at a bunch of these schools that now had to postpone these games. And you know, we got to keep our fingers crossed that it's not going to be a recurring problem next week and the week after.
Well said. Bruce Feldman is joining us. All right, Bruce, let me change up on you. You've got a piece right now on The Athletic about DK Metcalf, but it's not about him running down Buda Baker. It's about going back to his old coaches and teammates to find out what he was like on the way up. First of all, what was he like as an athlete in middle school and in his early years in high school?
Well, he was always fast. He was tall. He wasn't as obviously this hulking, you know, bodybuilder looking like guy that we saw at the combine, and we're certainly seeing at the NFL level. But everybody talked about this ridiculous work ethic he had, and it was from the time as long as anybody can remember. I mean, I talked to his old, like, Little League quarterback, who's now a quarterback at Southern Miss, and talked to coaches who saw him. Ole Miss really first offered him when he was in the ninth grade. Duke had offered him right before that. The Duke staff had happened to notice him at a camp, just like not even during the camp. They just saw him making these ridiculous one-hand catches off on his own. And it's just like this guy has not only been blessed with freaky genetics to do some amazing things, but also it's the work ethic. And it's probably more than that. It's really the work ethic. And the guys I talked to a man, they talked about how humble he is, the effort, but the work he would do on his own, that he was so driven to this that they're like, one of the coaches was basically like, it's so rare that somebody who, there may be one aspect of his game that wasn't great at one point, and he was maniacal about making sure that he was going to be great at that down the road. So I think everybody I talked to, and there's like two dozen people who have all these different stories and great anecdotes in the piece, each or come back and say, like, it couldn't happen to a better person because they know how hard he worked and how humble he has been throughout this process.
Bruce Feldman joining us. You know, Bruce, whenever I hear a story like that, and I mean, his work ethic and his drive and his determination really are legendary. I always ask the question, but like, where does that come from? Where does an enormous capacity for work and that drive in somebody like that come from? Is there any way to know?
You know, his dad played in the NFL for a while with the Bears and was a really good player at Ole Miss, Terrence Metcalf. You know, obviously you have that example of being around, you know, like Patrick Mahomes was around a lot of his dad's baseball teammates and kind of maybe saw it. But look, there's a lot of famous athletes who have sons who are around it and or kids who are around it, and maybe they didn't respond to it the same way. I just think that's the way he was made, with this kind of drive and awareness and self-awareness to say, yeah, I may have all these great abilities and I could, you know, be better than everybody else just on my own. Because, you know, when you're talking about some of these stories, you know, Lane Kiffin's brother, Chris, who's now a defensive line coach with the Cleveland Browns, is telling the story where he and he's on the Ole Miss staff, and he and the receivers coach are in a golf cart basically checking like players to make sure they're going to class, and they see this kid or this guy who's like a sculpted tall 6'3 guy, and they're like, we got to get him to walk on our team. And then the receivers coach gets up closer and he's like, wait, that's Terrence Metcalf's kid. He's in ninth grade. And then he's like, someday that guy's going to play for me. And Chris Kiffin's looking at him going, look, see that frame? He goes, that guy's going to be sacking quarterbacks for me. And it's like, turns out that guy who probably could be sacking quarterbacks is going to be one of the best receivers in the NFL. And again, I think it just, you know, certain people are wired differently. And this guy has that. And look, credit to his mom and dad, credit to everybody who's been around him. But I think you got to really give most of the credit to him, because he's certainly like one of the players I talked to for this story, DeMarcus Lodge, who was a former big time receiver who signed at Ole Miss, said he's a year older than DK. And he said he had it all figured out from the time he came into the program. It was like these guys, he was like a future, he was like a pro before he was ever in the NFL in terms of how his care for his craft and everything it meant to him.
Bruce Feldman is joining us. So one more thought about him then. So if this guy is all these things, and he is, like, he's freaky genetically, his work ethic is unparalleled, he figured out the process at a very early age, he's humble, he's an amazing teammate, I mean, he checks every single box emphatically, how do you explain the fact that he lasted until number 64 overall in the draft?
The only thing I could really rationalize saying, Jim, is he did not play a ton in his 3 years at Ole Miss, because his first year, he catches two touchdown passes in the first couple of games, and he breaks his foot while catching a touchdown pass, and he's out for that year. And then in his third year, he breaks his neck because he's on the kickoff return team, but he's not a returner; he's a blocker. And they're like, "DK, you don't need to do this." He's like, "No, I want to be out there. I want to show everybody how physical I am." And he ends up with kind of a freakish injury that where he ends up with a broken bone in his neck. So I think there were some concerns just from an injury standpoint of like, well, you know, that was maybe a question mark. Then I think there was a little bit of people looking at it and going, well, we haven't seen that much of him. Maybe he doesn't run this route as good as, you know, like, I think it was probably overblown and almost like this guy's too good to be true. But I think there were some people who probably wrote him off and said, well, there's only certain kind of routes he's really good at. What they didn't give him the credit for was realizing DK Metcalf was going to work so hard to get so much better at those other things. I mean, in the story, I get into how some of his coaches early on said he wasn't great at press cover when he was getting pressed as a freshman, because when he was in high school, I mean, he was this hulking guy. Nobody was going to mess with him. And then he gets in the SEC, and you have Greedy Williams and these other really good cornerbacks who are going to be in your face. And it took him a little while to learn the technique of how to handle it. And they said once he learned it, once he worked it and repped it to death, he got great at it. And just like everything else, that work ethic is making him a superstar in the NFL, because all those other things that he may not have been as great at, now he's gotten great at those.
It's a great read, too. Bruce Feldman joining us for a few more moments. All right, Bruce, you were also on with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks recently. You were talking about what Joe Burrow was like when he was at LSU, which is connected to your book, Flip the Script. What did you see in Burrow when he was at LSU in the spring of last year? How did he look to you at that point?
Man, Jim, the crazy thing is at LSU, the defense always dominates. And nobody had ever seen in Baton Rouge the offense kicking the defense's tail. And look, we saw these other receivers. Now, Justin Jefferson's had a terrific rookie season in the NFL. He emerged. Ja'Marr Chase is going to be a high first-round pick. He emerged. So you saw these other receivers. Clyde wasn't what, you know, didn't become look like a first-round guy at that point, but you could start to see flashes in him. But everything stemmed from the confidence Joe Burrow had operating really a lot of the new offense that Joe Brady had brought with him from the Saints. And I think what Ogeron had told me a lot about in Flip the Script was it was basically like having a player coach in college football. And that never happens, right? I mean, he was around Matt Leinart when he was a Heisman quarterback, and as smart as Matt is and what he thought of him, he was like, you know, you have this guy whose dad was a Joe Burrow, son of a college defensive coordinator, is a brilliant guy. and he understands football in ways that no college quarterback that he's ever been around has. And I think you had that in a system that fit him really well with really good talent, and the confidence level, I think, of how he responded. I'll be honest, Jim, after working on Flip the Script, I came away thinking the Cincinnati Bengals are going to go from being a loser franchise for a long time to a team that's going to be in the playoffs in the not-too-distant future because of what Joe Burrow is going to do there. I mean, you know, there's no such thing maybe as a can't miss, but as long as that guy stays healthy, I think he is going to be a franchise quarterback, and because his physical tools, he runs well, you know, he's accurate, he doesn't have a cannon for an arm, but I just think his mind is so sharp and his presence of a leader and a competitor is really, really rare.
This dude really does have a beautiful mind. If they can get him some help up front and make sure that he's got the right guys around him, there's no doubt he's going to have a great, great career if he stays healthy. Bruce, one more thought. You and DJ and Bucky also touched on college coaches who can successfully make the transition to the NFL. Matt Rhule obviously doing a really nice job. You made the point that if you had to pick one college coach to be your head coach in the NFL right now, that you would take Ohio State's Ryan Day. Lay that out for me. Why is that the case?
A couple of reasons, Jim. First of all, I think Ryan Day's temperament, he's not one of these coaches who seems like he's like the fifth, like the old school mentality or my way or the highway. He gets college players. I think he gets you know, how to control things, but also I think they know he's got a real good feel for offense. You look at what he has done for his quarterbacks. I mean, Dwayne Haskins had a career year under him, was a one-and-done, became a first-round pick. You see what he's done. Justin Fields has been a remarkable fit in that offense. So this is a guy also, unlike a lot of people who've had success at college, at the college level, he's actually spent a bunch of time in the NFL. He was on Chip Kelly's staff at a couple of different places in the NFL, so he knows that world. He knows, I think, some of the stuff that you would get into, because it's a different kind of ecosystem than what you have in college football. So I think both his ability to understand offense, I mean, look at all the receivers that Ryan Day has helped really flourish. There's a bunch of dudes in the NFL right now whose careers were really elevated, I think, when Ryan Day got to Columbus, right? And, I mean, you know, just he has a really good feel for it. I mean, he found a receiver in California in Chris Olave that was nobody was really that buzzing about. And Chris Olave is probably going to be a first-round pick. Credit to Day because he was the one who found him. I just think there's a lot of guys, whether you want to say it's, you know, Lincoln Riley, certainly, I mean, who I think are really sharp and I think could make that transition. Matt Campbell, I think, probably could too at Iowa State. But to me, because of Ryan Day's background of his time in there, because of how well he understands offense in this day and age in football, I think he would be as close to a seamless transition as you're probably going to get.
He is a reporter for Fox Sports and FS1, both a national college football insider for The Athletic. He is a New York Times bestselling author, and Bruce Feldman's newest book is called Flip the Script. It's with Ed Orgeron. It is out right now. Another great segment. Nice job, Bruce. Always good to have you on, and I always appreciate talking college football with you. Thanks so much.
Always a pleasure, Jim. Thanks for having me.
I know you have beef, Kathleen. I just don't know what it is. Kathleen, exactly what is your beef?
How come you got to hate on Creed? There's nothing wrong with their music. I like Creed, though I don't like them nearly as much as I like the Swedish Boys of Avatar. But come on, Creed ain't that bad. It's better than all this other music out there.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like it. I don't like that call.
Kathleen, you're entitled to your opinion. No matter how bad that opinion is. No matter how wrong that opinion is.
Good night now!